Welcome to Season 3 of Conversations with Coaches. This is a stakeholder-centered coaching production where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. I'm Brandon Murgard, your host for the season. This season, we go deep into our case study library to discuss the real-life challenges of leaders with the coaches who help them succeed. As an added bonus, we're giving away the latest installment of our coach case study library, which includes case study summaries, transcripts of each episode, and ways you can connect with the guest. Get your copy today at mgscc.net/case-studies. In this episode, we bring in industry heavy hitter Brenda Bentz, a world-renowned leadership coach, as she shares her experience working with a high-stakes CEO succession planning project for a $2.5 billion company. Discover how Brenda navigated complex stakeholder dynamics and coached both the successor candidate and the incumbent CEO to ensure a seamless transition and sustainable growth under new leadership.
I was engaged to work on a CEO succession plan or program with a large publicly listed company on the New York Stock Exchange, $2.5 billion at that time. And the CEO was the founder of the business. And he had been in place for over 30 years. So he really had founded it and it had grown tremendously. Now, the CEO didn't think that he could retire. And that's what caused all of this. He just didn't feel anyone was ready to step up and take over. And they had explored going externally. They were looking more because of the culture that they had. They really wanted to maintain that culture. They wanted to look internally. The CEO was just not convinced that anyone internally was going to be able to do this job. But the board, he was aging and the board was saying it was time to find a successor. And many possible successors over the years have been named in the past, but none of them had met the CEO's high standards. And all of those succession plans had just fallen by the wayside over the years. But it really was time, and the board was insisting they had to find the successor, and it had to be done reasonably soon. So there were a few people that put forth, but one was put forth, and this was a leader who'd been in the company for 25 years and who was now a very good and capable CFO, the chief financial officer. So I met with the chief financial, the CFO for a trial session and had a great conversation. Now, just for context, this was a woman in a very male-dominated industry, And so there were some things that came out of that trial session. She decided she wanted to work with me. I said, yes, let's do this. It feels like a good fit. And so then we moved into the process of identifying what she might work on, what were the keys to working on. And we did that through stakeholder feedback. The feedback came back that there were three key areas she could focus on. One, because it was a male-dominated industry, she needed to strengthen her executive presence, especially when it came to communicating in with, these vast industry people and so forth. And she needed to be viewed as a trusted partner by the CEO, by the board, by customers, these massive, huge customers, by industry partners, and by her peers, because her peers would eventually potentially become her direct reports, right? And she also really wanted to focus on strategic activities that really impacted the entire company, because she'd only really done finance up to that time. And so really wanted to help her to do that, to really focus succession planning on those three core challenges and those three core opportunities for her to improve. And then she also had a lot of interest in doing succession planning across the whole organization, because it really hadn't been done. I think that was part of the problem from the start. So that's kind of how we got set up. We started into the coaching sessions. I interviewed 14 stakeholders. I wanted to make sure we had a really broad perspective on her progress. So we had board members, we had peers, of course, the CEO, and direct reports. So that's kind of the context of how this was all set up to start.
Wow. Okay. So $2.5 billion publicly traded company, New York Stock Exchange, you're working at the very highest level in what sounds like an incredibly consequential engagement. So Take me to the very beginning. How did they find out about you? What did that first touch point with you look like?
Well, I'm actually listed on some sites as one of the top C-suite coaches. And so they found that and they interviewed, I think they interviewed 10 different coaches, and I ended up doing a trial session with the CFO, as I mentioned, that she chose me. And so that worked out really well. Yeah, it was just a really nice fit in terms of what I do and what they were looking for.
When they first reached out to you, you know, this is a very broad and fairly robust situation. Were they crystal clear when they reached out to you with the needs, or was that something that you sort of had to flesh out through the conversations in this trial session?
They were clear on the needs, which was we need to find a successor to the CEO. They weren't really clear on what specific areas needed in a strengthening with this particular individual. So through my trial session, I had an indication, but also, of course, through those early stakeholder discussions, I had some very clear objectives too. What I did is when I work with any kind of succession at the high ends of the corporations, I do what I call the top 10 list. And the top 10 list, or I asked this, in this case, the CEO, the CEO advisor, et cetera, to make a top 10 list of all the characteristics that are critical for success in the CEO position. And then we had to look at them and say, if you had to, not all characteristics are created equal. So which ones are most critical for this at this stage? And so that helped us focus a little bit. But then that in combination with the stakeholder feedback allowed me to really say, okay, here are the things I'm seeing. And I turned to the CFO and said, this is what I'm hearing. What do you think? And then we worked together to massage that and figure out what the specific goals that she wanted to work on and that we would be measuring through stakeholders, through feedback, through results, to make sure over the course of a year that we would get the outcomes that she was looking for.
And was the goal to get this CFO in position to take over the CEO role within a year, or was it just to establish the succession planning pipeline so that you had, a clear pathway for succession at each role?
Yeah, it's a good question, Brandon. Really what it was is they needed to feel confident that she was the right choice. So it was kind of like a year to figure out if she was really the right choice. So there were certain things that she needed to demonstrate over that year that would say, yes, we think we're on the right track. Yeah.
Do you love working in these very consequential, very high stakes types of engagements? I mean, that's what you're so good at. Do you enjoy that?
I love it. I love it. I'll tell you why, Brandon. A number of reasons. First of all, that old adage, it's lonely at the top. It's really lonely at the top. Okay. I used to be an executive myself of big corporations. It's lonely at the top. That's not just a nice little wording. It is the truth. And so when you can actually relate to those people at the high ends and say, hey, here's what you're going, let's work on this together. There's a sense of, oh, I have somebody I can turn to. I have someone that I can work on this. That's really cool. But the other thing is, don't forget, when you work at these high ends, you're talking tens of hundreds of thousands of people that are being impacted because it trickles down throughout the whole organization. One of the things that's coming out of this I'll share later is the impact that this one coaching engagement has had on the entire organization when it comes to coaching. So this is why I love working at that space, because when it trickles down, you're impacting not just those individuals at the high end, you're impacting hundreds of thousands of people around the world. Yeah.
Well, you're so good at it. And it's joyful for me to see people who have been able to match what they happen to be disproportionately talented at, well-trained at, educated at, and actually put them in the environment to thrive. So I'm very eager to get into this. Tell me what that first conversation with the CFO was like. So you sit down with her and what happens next?
Well, the original conversation, the trial session, was really making sure that there was a good fit. I asked about all sorts. I asked a series of different questions to make sure that there's a good fit there. It really is a no obligation opportunity for her to say, am I right for her? It's for me to say, are you right for me, right? We always check for coachability. And so so all of that took place early. I flew to that location, and I think we were together for almost 3 hours. We were supposed to have a quick lunch for an hour, and it went on for 3 hours. So, she just really she was really benefiting from it, just even that initial conversation. Because the point of that conversation for me is to demonstrate coaching.
What are you looking for when you evaluate coachability?
Yeah. Well, are they open for coaching? Like what kinds of coaching are they open? Are they looking for an advisor? Are they looking for a coach? Are they looking for a mentor? Are they looking, you know, there's a range of coaches, right? And so I really want to understand that what this person is looking for is consistent with how I go about coaching. So it was just a matter of finding that really good fit. And of course, you're always looking for rapport. There has to be trust there. You know, even the way you set it up, she wanted to have lunch in a restaurant. And I said, you know what, the key to the success here is that we have a trusting relationship. Is there a way we can have a private room? So she arranged a private room so we could talk openly, not be sitting out coaching in the middle of a restaurant or something, right? So it's all about setting it up, the context, the conversation, the coaching example, so that she could feel comfortable in the approach that would be the future of how we'd be working together.
In this first discussion, it's not uncommon for leaders to feel apprehensive or even a little bit of friction when we say, we're going to involve stakeholders. They're going to be the people here who are going to be giving us insights and helping us along the way. What was that? What was the response from the CFO when you first pitched that as an idea?
Well, thanks for asking. I think that's probably one of the most important things we do when we focus on stakeholders and as part of our coaching process. I will not coach someone who isn't open to having stakeholders involved. Why? And I explain it like this. I say, potential CEO, here's the thing. We have eyes inside of our head, not outside. So we cannot see ourselves the way others do, right? It's just not possible. And there's no way. And even if I came in and observed you, and I would do that as part of the coaching, I am not working with you day in and day out. The only people who know the experience of working with you are the people who are your stakeholders. And our goal is to make sure that over time, they're seeing changes in behaviors, usually reflective of changes in mindset, that are impacting the way you act, react, look, sound, in the way you're coming across as part of this process. So I just calmly, confidently said, this is the way it works. This, if you choose to work with me, this is how it would go. I make sure that they're understanding you will be the one who helps me choose the stakeholders. There's a set of criteria for those stakeholders that we'll look at together. This is all about making you sure you are comfortable that we're getting the right inputs that are going to help you be the best you can be at what you want to do.
And did she wholeheartedly embrace that? Or did she wince a little bit and say, hold on a minute, tell me more?
Well, some wince. But, you know, if you present it in a very matter of fact, this is how it works. This is how the best coaching is done. This is what will make you make sure that you succeed at what you want to achieve. And by the way, she knew what was going on. She knew that this was a potential CEO succession, right? So that cat was out of the bag. So once you know that, if she's hungry enough, she's going to do what it takes to reach the achievements that she wants to achieve. And that's part of what you check out too, right? Are they hungry enough? I always say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is high, 1 is low. How hungry are you to make change? And I'll tell you, Brandon, secret between us, if someone doesn't answer 9 or 10, I won't work with them.
What if they say 8? What's your response to that?
I'll say, I only work with 9s or 10s. Is there any way you think you could get to a 9 or a 10? If they say 7, 6, I'll just say, you know what? I'm probably not the right coach for you. Just because, you know, I really work with people who are hungry to make change, because this is all about making positive, long-term, sustainable changes in behavior, period. So, and once you explain that, you know, usually what happens, okay, I'm a 9. I changed my mind, right? So that's fine. I mean, look, as long as they're fine, good. Okay, we're on 9. Okay, what does a 9 mean to you? How does that look? How does that feel? What would you be doing every day if you're a 9 every day, right? How would it be different than what you're doing today? So you really want to check and make sure that they're really committed, because then it's a year-long journey.
I want to go off path just for a minute, because I think you've said what may be one of the most important things for coaches to understand, especially in this new era through 2020 and beyond that coaching has sort of grown into, is not to take the 6s and 7s, unless that's your space. If that's the space, find the 6s and 7s, work with them. But how did you reach that point with confidence and, you know, even with your business and cash flow to be able to say, I'm only going to work with 9s and 10s. If you're a 6 or a 7 or an 8, good luck. I'll put you in touch with someone. You know, thinking about the coach audience now, what can you share or impart with them to get to the point that you are and just work with the hungry ones?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, look, I've been doing this for, what, 18 years, something, 19 years, something like this. So I've been coaching for a very, very long time. And that comes with experience. But I would learn from my early years that if I didn't get the nines and the tens, it was heavy lifting. It was hard work. They were not always happy. I was not always happy. When I could work with the nines and tens, it was just like you're working at a different level. Just a different level. And so I started owning my own space of, you know what, I'm going to work with nines and tens. And that's how this is going to work. No harm, no foul. If they say they can't change from a six or a seven, I have no judgment. There's no judgment there at all. I just would say I'm probably not the right coach for you, given that situation. But no, I nines or tens, let's be honest. And here's the other thing from a pure business standpoint. Let's be honest. Our success depends on their success. So why would I work with a six or seven if I don't think they're going to be that particularly hungry to make change, if I could work with a nine or a 10? And you have to also have faith that the nines and tens are coming. You know, when you start off, you've got to know that a nine or a 10 is coming, that you have faith in that the nines or tens are going to show up. And I can tell you, Brandon, they show up all the time.
Brenda, I wish I could have that tattooed on the back of every coach that goes through our program, because that is such a, it's a very wise thing. I appreciate your perspective on it and just the way that you approach this with such professionalism. Because I don't think people will be sad if they say I'm a seven and you say, you know, good luck.
That's right. Well, and actually, I just usually say, well, I'm very kind about it. I say, well, like, I only work with nines or tens. That's your choice. No, if there's any way you think you could get to that point, then feel free to reach out to me when it's time, because we had a wonderful conversation. It's just that I want to make sure, I want to work with the right people and you want to work with the right. You don't want to put your time and energy into something that you're only half-baked about anyway. So, and most of them are pretty, no, you're right. You're right. Maybe it's not the right time. And that's fine. But this woman was a 9 out of 10. I think she was a 10. I think she was an 11.
An 11. That's the ones you want. Well, okay. We're at the starting line. We know how you got here, what the conversation like, how you got the feedback. Walk us through this 12 months and tell us a bit about what you did.
Sure. So I started working on communication, executive presence. We had defined specific goals. I'm a very goal-oriented coach. I define very specific goals and we will measure them. We have a way of measurement. I use measurement to say, this is what success looks like and by when. Because if we don't put a deadline on it, it just becomes a dream, right? So you have to have a specific goal. What does success look like? How are we going to measure it? And who is going to be doing the measuring? So we're really, really clear from the very start. I work with three goals at a time, Brandon. The reason is because it's that high-end levels. Well, first of all, more than three, humans aren't very good at more than three. We're changing more than three. It's just really challenging. But if you can focus three major things to change in a course of a year, those three things will impact all the other things that might have even been on that 10 list of characteristics. So that's really important. So we really started focusing on that. One of the things we also wanted to do is spend more time with her colleagues, her peers, who, like I said, if it all worked out well, would eventually become her direct reports. So building those relationships, this is something that I would give as a side note to a lot of people in corporations. You know, we typically focus on managing up and we focus on managing down, right? Keep your boss happy, keep your direct reports happy, because those are the folks delivering the outcomes, right? We often forget about the peers. And at the higher levels of any organization, those peers can eventually become your direct reports or they might become your boss. So I think we really focused on helping her build those relationships at that level. And remember, this was a very male-dominated industry. She's the only female in all of the leadership team, okay? The whole leadership team, she was the only female. So building those relationships with, you know, the guys in manufacturing and the, you know, it was quite a good experience for her, because she'd been a CFO, a very good one. But CFOs tend to be more like in the office, get the work done, supervise your function, right? Well, now she had to expand all of that into a much bigger arena. And also get more visibility in the industry. So we started having her speak at big industry events. We started having her making connections within the industry, getting out and meeting clients, right? As a CFO, she'd really never had much exposure to clients before. And so she was just in charge. And then she also got in charge of the company's strategic plan for the coming year, because we wanted to demonstrate strat planning, her ability to do strategic work. And that impacted all functions, you see. So her ability to interact with all the functions came through that strategic work. So that's really, those are the core strategies, Brandon, that I would say. It was really about making sure she was set up for success across those three areas and with such a wide variety of stakeholders getting exposure to her.
You know, we talked a little bit before we started the interview about your technique of shadowing, which I find fascinating, and I don't think many coaches out there are doing this. Can you tell us a little bit about your approach to shadowing?
Absolutely. Now, look, stakeholder feedback is very helpful. There's no question. But sometimes it's also beneficial to do what's called coach shadowing. So I actually go into the boardroom, I go into management meetings, I go into leadership team meetings, I'll sit in on their one-on-ones with a direct report if that's a particular opportunity for them, and I shadow them. I simply watch. So I'll go for half a day, usually about 2 to 3 hours in total. Usually we set them up in advance. So I'll work with the client and say, okay, I'm going to be there on this day from, 9 in the morning till noon. What can we do during those 3 hours? What meetings can you set up that would be appropriate for me to observe around these behaviors that we're focusing on, right? And of course, mainly it's leadership in general anyway, but some form of the leadership, what we're focusing on. And so then maybe they'll set up a team meeting where they're leading it, or maybe they'll set up a management meeting with their peers if they're trying to learn how to manage their peers, or if maybe they'll meet up. I sit on many board meetings. I sit and observe the board and how this person's addressing and interacting with the board, for example. And maybe sometimes a one-on-one with in this case, the CEO, to understand as well how that relationship is going. So that gives me a wealth of information, and I come at it from a purely objective perspective. I'm on the outside looking in. I have no skin in the game in terms of, I'm just going to be honest, here's what I think you're doing really well. And here are all the specific behaviors that I really acknowledge in you. You're doing great. Here's some of the things I observed. What do you take about that? What is that? How does that come across? How do you think it would be like to receive that information in that way? And how might you say it differently? And so it's really just a very hands-on roll up our sleeves. I don't do it during that 3 hours. I just spend time. So I just literally follow them around the office or around whatever. And then afterwards, I usually take a day to summarize, because first of all, it's exhausting for them to get it all in one day. And I want to also prepare it and get it ready. And then I'll put it together into kind of an overview of, here's what I saw that was just terrific, keep it up, wonderful stuff. I can see how that's benefiting you. And here's some things that I observed. And there's always, I have never done this, and I've done this literally all over the world with hundreds of leaders. I've never had one who just didn't go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that, right? This is, by the way, this is an addition to the coaching. They don't have to do the shadowing. It's not a forced part of the program for me. But I do encourage it, and I encourage it 3 times. I encourage it at the very beginning of the coaching program. I encourage it about halfway through the year, and then I encourage it near the end, because they also get a chance to see, and I get to see as well, the changes that have happened during that process.
Amazing. Well, I think we could easily spend a whole episode just talking about this technique, how you set it up, how you preface the meetings. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening at home, tuning in at the gym or on your morning commute, if you want to know more about this shadowing technique, or you want us to do some more interviews or a LinkedIn Live about this, just leave a note in the comments, and that lets us know how to set our agenda. Brenda, you've gone through 12 months of coaching with this individual. You've had shadowing, you've gotten feedback along the way, and you've got very clear goals with measures. What happened?
So I'm not going to go clear to the end right away, Brandon, because a key piece that happened about halfway through the year, the feedback was coming in and coming in and coming in, and it was increasingly positive across all stakeholders. Remember, I had 14 stakeholders, but there was, and there were improvements across all areas of focus amongst all the stakeholders, except for one, and that was the CEO. And he kept saying he just wasn't seeing the changes. Everything was the same as the CFO had been for years. No change. And he was reasonable, I would say, fairly critical of her. She's just not getting it. She's just not getting it. And I thought, all right. So I said, and he said, I just don't think she's going to make it. And it was just so strange. And the key comment as he said, is she's still being the CFO in her approach to work. She's a bean counter. And I thought, okay. So the rest of the stakeholders were seeing it very differently, and they were seeing improvements, and they were very happy with the outcome. So the CEO was increasingly convinced that the successor wasn't doing it. So I said, all right, after a number of these feedback rounds, it became clear to me that the issue wasn't with the successor. The issue might be with the perception of the CEO. So I set up a one-on-one meeting with him. I actually flew out to meet him. And I said, I shared the top line outcome so far. I got permission from the client to make sure that she was fine sharing that. Absolutely. I didn't tell her that he saw her differently. That doesn't serve. So I shared the top line outcomes of the feedback so far. And the people, you know, the people were in general very positive that seeing her as a successor and making progress. And people kept saying, she's got a great leadership. She's strategic. She's who I would love having running this company. People were offering that. But I said, your feedback is different. I had to have that conversation with him. And I just said to him, what do you think that's about? I'm really curious. And you know, I would read some of the pieces of feedback, all anonymously, but I would read the feedback so he could hear what people were saying. And ultimately, he just had in his mind, Brandon, that she was a CFO. And for 25 years, she had been finance. So he kept looking at her as a CFO. So he was looking for behaviors that were CFO behaviors. What you seek, you will get. What you see, you will get back. But she was seeing everything through the lens of numbers, he said, not people. And I wasn't seeing that. Other people weren't seeing that. So I pointed this out to him. And I'm very objectively, curiously, and I said, I can see why you might see her that way because you've had so many years of her being the CFO. And I said, to what extent are you open to seeing her in a different light? Because it's going to be key for success in this process that you can see her in a different light. And based on others' perspectives, you know, she's exhibiting behaviors that would indicate that she does have what it takes. And that included, you know, board members were saying this too. And I was shadowing her. I was seeing good progress. I shared all of this with him. And she was thinking strategically. She was thinking big picture. And he sat there and he reflected. And he said, well, Brenda, you've coached so many CEOs, so many successors at this level. Do you think she has what it takes? Now, here's the thing, Brandon. It's not my business to say yes or no. It is not my job, right? And I said, here's the thing. I'm an outside objector and I want you objective outsider. And I want you to remember that. What I can say to you, CEO, is that what I am seeing, what I am hearing do indicate there are behaviors that would work at a higher level with broader strategic capabilities. I named a few characters, stayed as objective as possible. I'm not in this about me, right? It's about making sure that they get this company gets the right outcomes. There's a few characteristics that are specifically being called out. She's becoming a stronger thinker, stronger leadership among her peers in the industry, demonstrating bigger picture thinking, et cetera. I shared all of this, right? And what ended up happening, Brandon, is I ended up coaching the CEO on how to shift his own perspective because he realized that he really was the stumbling block. And what it came down to, I had him focus on what she was doing right, but I also had him help him to change his mind. And what came out of it really, and I honor this, I understand, he didn't really want to let go of the reins. It didn't matter who the potential successor was. And that tough conversation that I had with him that day in his office with the incumbent CEO was really the turning point for the whole engagement. When he started looking for where what she really was doing well. And honestly, within a very short time, the year went by, the board was thrilled. She was promoted to COO, then she was promoted to president and COO. And then the board officially named her as CEO just not too long ago. So the business under her leadership has done extraordinarily well. In fact, it's on track to double in the next year. What's been really fun for me is that because of that positive experience that the CFO eventual CEO had, the new one, she has implemented coaching throughout the whole organization. And that's happening at all levels of the organization now because she realized what an impactful experience that was. Yeah.
Amazing. Such a riveting story. It's so good to see. It's so good to see coaches as professional as you handle navigate such difficult waters. That conversation with the CEO could go any which direction.
Yeah.
Any which direction. Your approach was so, so wise.
Mm-hmm. You have to get out of your ego. It's not about ego. I'm there to support that organization. That's what they've engaged me for. It's not you versus me. It's about what's the right thing to do for the organization. And when you can rise up out of that, into that space, it's great. I remember when I first started working with this person, with this CEO, he sat me down when the client had decided that she wanted me for the coach. He pulled me and sat me in his office. The very first time we met, he said, I want you to understand, you work for the board, you work for the company, you work for me, you don't work for her. And that was another tough conversation I had to say. I said, I understand that, but I also know that I need to have trust with her. And to have trust with her, that means that there are going to be times when you're going to ask me questions that I cannot answer. What I'll do is I'll go back to her and make sure she's comfortable with the answer I'm going to answer. Because if I lose that trust with her, then the whole thing breaks. And he was like, okay. And it was funny because there was a CEO advisor in the room at the time. And the CEO advisor later, when the CEO left, she said, I've never seen anybody talk to him like that. And I said, well, sometimes you need to have those kind of conversations, right? You know, but anyway, so yeah.
Well, you know, there's so many things about this engagement that strike such a positive chord with me. And I think not the least of those is the compelling value of an excellent coach. There's a lot of coaches out there. I would contend that the vast majority of them would not have handled these situations nearly as tactfully as you have. The return on investment for the organization, the return on investment for that CEO, and the return on investment for that CFO and the peers and everyone else who's getting coached now is so astronomically high, and they could have cut a corner. They could have gone with a budget coach, or they could have said, you know, we don't need to involve stakeholders. We just need an advisor, a consultant.
Yeah. And so much of it comes down to what I'm glad you raised that, because so much of great coaching, and I'm not saying great, I'm just saying good coaching comes from rising up out of you versus me and getting people to recognize they have to rise out of you versus me. All drama in corporations is almost always you versus me. There's something going on with you versus me. And when you can get out of that drama and into that higher space of us, of we, of what's the right thing to do for the organization, what's the board need to do for this publicly listed company, when you can rise up out of it, it just takes everybody to a higher level. And when you can operate at that level, it changes the whole dynamic.
Amazing. I love it. And you know, you don't have to say you're a great coach. You are certifiably a great coach. And there's a number of organizations whose entire existence is predicated on identifying and naming great coaches, and you're on them. So you don't have to say that. I'm happy to say it, but you've got a lot of others out there saying it already. So thank you for sharing this. Tell us, you know, you've got such a rich experience. You've worked with so many clients in many different countries at the highest level. What did you walk away from this engagement with new as a key takeaway?
Yeah, well, I think, and this counts for all coaches, I think, we have to watch for patterns. Not just with the client, but with stakeholders too. You know, are there outliers in the feedback? If so, just get curious about that. Explore it. There's no right or wrong, good or bad. It's just looking at it from a perspective. Interesting. So these people are saying this, but this person is saying that. And you know, here's what happens often, Brandon. I hear this so much. And I will say, particularly I work in Asia, and that's true globally too. Often stakeholders come back, the feedback will come back. And what happens is they say, okay, but what did the boss say? Because that's going to matter the most. And you can't go there. You have to say, no, this person needs to be really, okay, I understand the board wants this. I get that. But if they can't, this person, this coaching client, can't improve on all the things that 9 other people are saying, it's going to have an opportunity cost there, right? So you have to push back, and you know, all stakeholders are created equal. And that was, in this case, probably one of the most important stakeholders in this whole engagement wasn't on board. You just couldn't get there. So remembering that stakeholders are human, they have preconceived biases just like everyone else. And it's key to get their buy-in from the very start, because their willingness to see the client in a different light, their willingness to see the person being coached in a different light, is going to be foundational. So really, and I had set him up for that, by the way. I had from the very start said, it's going to be key that you look at this person with a different perspective. But he hadn't stuck, because he had that belief in himself. He didn't want to let go. And that was stronger than any beliefs that he might have about how well she was doing. So if you, you know, sometimes you have to coach stakeholders to help them explore their own biases on a rare occasion. It doesn't happen that often. But the point is, you know, stakeholders are human too.
There is somewhere out there an organization who is facing a similar set of challenges, or who may be, you know, teetering right on that fulcrum that's going to tip the wrong direction. And they're thinking, you know, maybe coaching is the way to go. I'm not really sure. What advice would you have for that organization out there right now with a question mark hovering over their head about whether coaching is right for them?
Right. Well, you know, what is coaching about? Coaching is about helping people achieve long-term, sustainable, positive changes in behavior, right? Ultimately, it has to be about helping people move from where they are to where they want to be. It's really, that's, in fact, that's the definition of the original definition of coach, right? It was about a coach and four. You had a coach and four horses. The coach would take you from where you are to where you want to be, right? That's what coaching is. And so it really is about helping them say, you can get that, you can have that process. You know, we often think that they can just manage it themselves, but there's such advantage, such a benefit to having an objective outsider come in, step in, help them see things through the eyes that, like I said, we have eyes inside, not outside. You can't look back at yourself, and help them all to see how that would progress the organization as a whole. And it's just really about accepting that coaching is now, you know, I've been in this business so long now, Brandon, that when I first started coaching, it was like, don't tell anybody, he's got a coach, right? It was, it was so much like that. And now today it's like, hey, Brenda Bates is my coach. Woohoo! You know, it's, people are just shouting. It's fantastic, right? How it's changed. I have a coach. The company's giving me a coach. This is fantastic. That's changed. And by the way, my hat's off to Marshall for that, because I think Marshall is absolutely one of the forerunners of that. He really stepped out and said, this is what coaching can be. And I think that's foundational. And now it's really globally, he's really made a global difference in that outcome. But the point I have is, this is a new leadership, no, not new. This is a foundationally successful, proven successful leadership development process. Why not do it, right? Instead of a training course or instead of a whatever, why not use something that you know is so focused and so driven towards specific great outcomes. So yeah, at least explore it. What's the worst that can happen? You say no, right? That's why I always think a trial session is super important. Have the opportunity to just try it, see what it's like.
For the individual out there who wants to, you know, embark on one of these trial sessions or have that same enthusiasm of Brenda Bentz is my coach, how can they reach out to you, get in touch, follow your story?
Sure. Yeah. So there's many ways. I'm on all the social media, but the thing I would encourage, probably come to the website, visit the website. The second thing is LinkedIn, a reasonable following there. And I do a lot of posting on lessons from the C-suite and lessons in coaching and leadership. And so that would be a fun place to engage. And yeah.
This invaluable coaching journey with a leading global company demonstrates the power of strategic succession planning and the incredible effect of coaching on an organizational leadership transition. Inspired by Brenda's expertise in stakeholder management and leadership development, we hope this episode empowers you to explore systematic coaching strategies in your professional journey. Remember, all the case studies of the season are available for download at mgscc.net/case-studies. That's mgscc.net/case-studies. The link is also in the episode description. And if you'd like to better understand the foundations of leveraging stakeholders and measuring results in your coaching, then join the free training program, Foundations of Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we share the philosophies and frameworks that guarantee improved leadership in 12 months or less. You can register for the free course at mgscc.net/foundations-course. That's mgscc.net/foundations-course. Until next time, this has been another episode of Conversations with Coaches by Stakeholder Center Coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Thank you for joining this conversation, and stay tuned for more stories of leadership transformation.